gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National People Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN Republic Broadcasting. .org. It's the supermarket of free speech, because sometimes you're in the supermarket and they have all sorts of stuff, and RBN has all sorts of stuff, all sorts of information and news and views. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage. You can send it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. You can phone it into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators will be standing by to take your money with gladness. Okay, so on Tuesday night, pretty late, Dr. Duke called me and started talking to me about a bunch of stuff. And he sounds a little bit different at night because he's tired. It was past his bedtime. But we talked about some stuff, and partway through I said, hey, why don't I just click the record button? So I clicked the record button, we kept talking, and it went on and on and on. And I guess I have about an hour's worth of recording. I'm going to play for you maybe the first 43 minutes or so, and then maybe what's left over will be included in my Friday broadcast. If I air this on Thursday, then I would air the remainder probably on Friday. We'll see. At any rate, without further ado, here is that conversation.
Well, as you know, Dr. Duke, everything is falling apart in the Ukraine, and you've got a big feud between Zelensky and Zelensky, and at this point, neither can get rid of the other, but who knows? That situation might not last long. You've also got Poroshenko, who has been recorded on a captured phone call or something, or a leaked phone call. Poroshenko was talking to some other billionaire and was talking about the overthrow or the a coup d'etat against Zelensky. And then Klitschko, Vitaly Klitschko, the former heavyweight champion.
Yeah, you tell me that, yeah.
Yeah, he's been the mayor of Kiev for the past nine and a half years, I guess. And he is saying publicly that Zelensky is becoming authoritarian, right? Mm-hmm. So you got that stuff going on. And then you got Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO chief. And I just saw a headline on Yahoo News, which, you know, Yahoo News is just full of BS. But at any rate, it's they're just kind of representative of the mainstream media. And they said Stoltenberg's about to make an announcement. What was the announcement? It was something like he's going to deliver some bad news. So you've got all that. And then you had... William Burns, the director of the CIA, who is a career diplomat, and you could say Anthony Blinken's a career diplomat. They actually had a pretty similar career, but Burns doesn't seem to be. He doesn't seem to be. Well, he's not Jewish.
And he was an ambassador to Russia before.
I guess he was, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He was also the Undersecretary of State, the number two person at the State Department.
Yep.
He was the one immediately preceding Blinken. There was another Burns, Nick Burns, who's Nicholas Burns was also had that position. And then there was also a character on Saturday Night Live called Nick Burns, your company's computer guy, who was really, really obnoxious. But that's besides the point. At any rate, so you had Burns went over and maybe he was delivering bad news, but also Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin went over and was talked to Zelensky, and Zelensky said that he needed something like 70 million shells and $400 billion. Now, yesterday when Mercurius was reporting this, Mercurius was saying, oh, it's, you know, Lloyd Austin must have thought that Zeluzhny was out of his mind. But today, Alexander Mercurius had this very different take, because, and this is what he has now concluded. You might remember a year or so ago, Zelensky was interviewed in a British newspaper. Mm. I think it was he was interviewed in a British newspaper, and he said that Ukraine needed so many shells and 350 tanks, and he just had this big long laundry list, which he wound up getting commitments for. As it turned out, the Americans weren't able to produce all of the weaponry because we don't have the industrial capability. But he had asked for a huge amount of weaponry, mm-hmm. in order to defeat the Russians, and for the most part got it. Now, Alexander Mercurius's analysis of it today was, he's now thinking that when Zeluzhny asked for all those weapons a year ago in order to conduct a spring offensive, what Zeluzhny was doing, was signaling, was, look, this is impossible. We really can't win. We would need all of this in order to win. We'd need all of this, expecting he would not get it. But he got it. And then, of course, well, not of course, but he disappeared for a while in the spring. The spring offensive didn't start until the summer. And so what Mercurius is now concluding is that Zeluzhny, his initial request was, he didn't intend to have it granted. It got granted, and now all of a sudden he was expected to do this insane counteroffensive that he knew wouldn't succeed. But he had asked for the weaponry, he got the weaponry, and then he was expected to do this, and so he went ahead with it. And now he's saying insane amounts, because he said 70 million shells, and apparently Lloyd Austin said, well, there's not 70 million shells in the whole world, $400 billion. So what Zeluzhny is thinking, and not what Zeluzhny, what Alexander Mercurius is thinking, is Zeluzhny is just trying to say, look, we can't win. It's an impossible task. I'm making an impossible demand on you because it's an impossible task. Now that's mm-hmm. his take. And if you're to believe his take, it means that the Pentagon is really dense, that the Pentagon didn't really know what the plan was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's possible. Because here's the thing. This was all planned out by the State Department. This was planned by Victoria Nuland in particular, and it was planned years ago. And the whole idea was to provoke Russia into invading Ukraine, use the invasion as a pretext to galvanize international support for unprecedented economic sanctions against Russia that would cause so much economic instability in Russia that Vladimir Putin would be overthrown. I've always been absolutely sure that was the plan. But the thing is, you know, they can't say that out loud. So mm-hmm. they have to say, Ukraine got invaded. We've got to help Ukraine. And so, like, Ukraine was being sacrificed. Ukraine was being sacrificed. Now, the idea that would be very obvious to us, but it wouldn't be obvious to the Pentagon, that the Pentagon would actually think that they're trying to fight a war and win against Ukraine, that they wouldn't know that it was really this different kind of plan for regime change in Russia. Mm-hmm. How far-fetched is it? And this is the last thing I want to say. How far-fetched is it? Well, you know, I've told you about my associate for many, many years, who was a colonel an intelligence officer and a full colonel in the military. He used to brief Stanley McChrystal when Stanley McChrystal was chief of operations in Afghanistan and whatnot. And now as a retired colonel, he works every day in the Pentagon as a consultant. So he's in the Pentagon. He's at a reasonably high level. And when I talked to him earlier, just a few months ago, he really thought that Ukraine was going to win. He thought Ukraine was going to win. And so I don't know how far up the groupthink goes. It may well go to the very, very top, that these people actually thought that the Russian army, that the Russians suck, that their army is, you know, incapable of winning wars, and that they were going to beat the Russians using the Ukrainians. They may have really believed that. If that's the case, it explains a fair amount. But, you know, the State Department had the plan. I'm sure that was the State Department's plan. But obviously lots and lots of people, lots of journalists, lots of people around the world thought that Ukraine, with the help of NATO and the West, was going to beat the Russians. You know, and I'm always amazed, like when I'm talking to the Japanese, when I'm talking to high Japanese officials or people in the media, that they believe this line. They believe the cover story that A, the idea is to help Ukraine defend itself, and B, with enough Western help, plucky little Ukraine will beat the Russians. And, you know, and when you look around, aside from us, there really haven't, you know, who else has been consistently saying there's no way Ukraine can win? Like, I'm sure there's some people, but like the one person that stands out to me is Andrew Anglin, right? He's been saying the same things that we've been saying all along, steadfastly.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we have in common with him? We have a very clear view of the Jews. We have a clear understanding of the Jews. But then you think of Mearsheimer, for instance. Mearsheimer, or even the weapons inspector, Scott Ritter. They both went through periods, like maybe the summer of 2022, where they were saying that the Russians are losing and they're a lot of them are dying, where they were actually eating a lot of this line. And these are people who don't understand Jewish power, or at least won't let themselves understand it. So I thought that was interesting. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I don't know what to really comment about it. I think it's true.
Yeah.
What do you get out of that? I mean, what's your biggest impression from that, what you just told me?
That I think we often overestimate the awareness and understanding of people in power. That we have a tendency to think that they understand what's going on just as well as we do. And whether it's the Ukraine war, whether it's the COVID stuff, like I my critique of Andrew Anglin during the COVID stuff, and he never mentioned me by name, but he did respond to my critique. I'm sure he was responding to me, because I don't think anybody else made this critique. Andrew Anglin, he didn't think there was any COVID virus. He just thought it was the flu. But the thing is, his assumption was that everybody knew it. That there's it's just the flu, bro, and everybody knows it. And I usually don't criticize him in public because I support him. I mean, I really like him. I support what he does. But I did have to say, look, if you believe that it's just the flu, that's one thing. But to think that everybody knows it, no. People don't know. People in high positions don't know things. It's erroneous for us to think that everybody in Congress understands Jewish domination of Congress the way we do.
Yeah,
We assume they do. But I mean, who do we have? Even Cynthia McKinney. I mean, maybe, like, she might be practically the only person. They might, some of them might understand. But do you think how well does Marjorie Taylor Greene understand? Why does she say things like she says and then have to apologize for it?
Well, remember P.T. Barnum's comments. Never underestimate the stupidity of people.
Yeah.
And or the ignorance of people.
I think he said specifically the American public or the American people. Yeah. But I say never underestimate the ignorance of our political leaders. And I just look at people. I look at Prime Minister Kishida, who, you know, he was foreign minister for a number of years, and he's got experience, foreign policy experience, and he got everything all wrong. I'm sure he believed, like, he had Zelensky, he invited Zelensky to the G7 summit in Tokyo this past summer, and it was a complete disaster. Even then, it was a disaster because he also had Modi show up, and he had Lula show up. He had invited them to the G7 for whatever reason. And Modi had like a really, really terse meeting with Zelensky. And Zelensky was like so overwhelmed by the bad response he got from Modi that he stood up Lula. He didn't even go to Lula's meeting. He just stood him up, which totally pissed off Lula. I mean, I just think that we, not so much you and I, but, you know, the like people in our movement, if you want to call it that, just assume that everybody is in, like everybody knows what's going on and they're all playing along with it because they're all bought off or whatever. And I just think we're really overestimating these people's understanding. I don't know. That's my thought.
That's not like 100%.
It's not like I have the most elite contacts, but I have enough elite contacts, people who are in academia, a few people in the military, members of Congress, members of foreign parliaments, you know, journalists at big organizations. And I don't think anybody understands very well.
I think exactly right. I mean, you know, and one of the reasons maybe why I got so animated in my life and so dedicated to this issue was I felt really deceived because my whole life, I mean, I was taught, you know, I was raised on the stories of King David, you know, and David and Goliath. My name's David, and all the biblical stories and so forth. I remember very clearly when I was a kid, and I was the first time I read the Bible, and I really read it because I wanted to go right to the source. I wanted to read it for myself and just see what it says. And I wasn't necessarily that anti-Jewish at that moment at all. In fact, I wasn't anti-Jewish, but I saw all sorts of things in the Bible that piqued my natural curiosity and my scientific kind of thinking. And it was like, and I remember reading Psalms. And I was reading the Psalms, and it was about these very beautiful passages. And, of course, you remember the passages, like everybody knows them by heart practically, you know. You know, though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Lord thy. And then I'm reading another passage talking about being with our brethren. And then in the middle of all these nice words, you know, it says, blessed is.
You've got the magic touch. Ooh. It makes me glow so much. Ooh. It casts a spell. It rings a bell. The magic touch. When I feel your charm, it's like a alarm. You make me thrill so much. You've got the magic touch.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafine, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. Illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Right on out of my arms, still I feel you a free lover. Your wonderful charms, lips that once were mine. Tender arms that charm, baby, and I'll see you in my dreams, and I'll see you in my dreams.
And then I'm reading another passage talking about being with our bread with our brethren, and then in the middle of all these nice words, you know what it says? Blessed is every one of our people who bashes in the heads of our enemies on the rock, the heads of our, the children of our enemies on the rocks. That's actually in Psalms.
You know, I know, because at my mother's funeral, we were going over what the minister would say. The minister, not a priest. My sister wanted it at a Presbyterian church. But at any rate, we were going over what he would say and be going through the Psalms, and I had to stop and I said, you can't have this line, you can't have that line, you know, there is a time for war and a time for peace. And I said, no, my mother didn't think there was a time for war, so you can't say that. So he complied. He edited it. He deleted it. But that, yeah, I remember that.
I mean, literally, it said, blessed is those that bash the brains out, basically, of the children of the enemy on the rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I started, you know, and I didn't even think about it that way about Jews, but I was always taught, you know, how noble they were and how good they were. I mean, and then one of the things I did after I encountered in the early 60s, I read some of the readings of Rockwell. And Rockwell told the story, the real true story that's right in Genesis, if you just open your eyes, about the Pharaoh and the Jews, right? How, you know, all about Joseph, you know, who was sold by his brothers into slavery, and he was charged by his master with trying to rape and seduce his wife. Joseph said, no, she tried to do it to me. Anyway, he's in jail, and then he rises and he interprets dreams because he's got the butler's, the Pharaoh's butler with him in prison. And so he realizes the Pharaoh's really interested in understanding dreams and everything. And he's figuring the butler might be reinstated. And he does get reinstated. And so the butler apparently gets along with the Pharaoh pretty good. And he says, I know this guy in prison. He's the best dream interpreter all. And the fast-talking Joseph then does the whole thing. But the interesting thing is that if you read Genesis and Exodus, I mean, you read this and it's like, it's such an amazing story. So the Jews are, there is a famine all over the known world at that time, way outside the bounds of Egypt. And Jews themselves, they were starving. Mm-hmm. And so they come to Egypt trying to find a better situation there. And then there's a reuniting between Joseph and his other brothers who sold him into slavery and the Jewish people again, right? And you know the story, though. I mean, you know the story. And then you have all these revealing passages in there, right? So the Jews came. They had nothing. And in fact, it talks about how that they were dying. They were dying of thirst, and they had no food. They had nothing. And so Joseph got the Egyptians to take him in and feed him and help him and everything. And then it talks about how in a very short period of time, they were just kind of taking over everything. Of course, Joseph was the master, like the economic master of Egypt, according to the Old Testament. I don't know if any of that's true. It may just be a big story Jews made up about how great they are, but it probably is.
No, that would never happen. Dr. Duke, come on.
And they didn't kill. They didn't behead 40, you know, Jewish babies. They beheaded 40,000 Jewish babies in that raid, don't you know?
Yeah.
It must be an anti-Semite. It wasn't 40, it was 40,000.
40,000. The projection, isn't it? There's some projection going on.
Anyway, it's interesting talking about that. And I think remembering when I was so ignorant and so uninformed and so deluded and so emotionally more committed to Jews, thinking they're really great people and forerunners of Christianity and so forth. And nobody had put to me that point yet that they also were really anti-Christian. And they tried to do everything they could. Back, some of the first things that started waking me up was in the 60s, I read a lot of popular literature, and I read a lot of magazines and articles and so forth. And I remember reading this story, this book written by a Jew, of course, called The Passover Plot. And this book, with very little evidence whatsoever, tried to make, you know, a very good scientific historically sound.
Truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email tom@republicbroadcasting.org. tom@republicbroadcasting.org.
With very little evidence whatsoever, tried to make, you know, a very good scientific, historically sounding justification, or saying that Jesus was actually drugged with a certain kind of drug, and then he kind of fell into like a stupor, and he didn't die on the cross, and then, you know, and he just came back from the drug-induced stupor, right? But it was written by this Jew to ridicule, the crucifixion and the second coming. But the point is that Jews were always ready to undermine the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm. So, as I, you know, I don't know if you know it or not, but I'm a very gregarious person.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I think you are. I know that about you already. Go ahead.
Okay. And I,
you love people, and that you love communicating with people and kind of meeting different people and getting.
I talk to people all the time. So all day long, I'm talking to different people.
Me too. That's the way I am too.
Yeah, I know you. I know you do. I've seen you in action. So, and a lot of the people I interact with are Jews, and as you know, on a personal level, I actually like them, right? And it's not that I reject what you're talking about, and you know, mm-hmm. they have this is in their religion, and obviously I bitch and moan about Jewish group behavior as much as anyone, a lot, right? Because it's been very, very destructive. You look at what's going on in the world today, and you actually analyze it, and you see the Jewish responsibility that most of the things that we're complaining about just wouldn't be happening. Maybe other bad things would be happening, but it's hard to imagine things being this bad. Maybe they would. But anyway, the things that are actually happening that are bad wouldn't be happening if it weren't for Jewish power. But Jewish power is to a very large extent a manifestation of their group behavior. On an individual basis, I mean, sometimes there can be very obnoxious Jews or cutthroat Jews in business or whatever. But on the whole, you know, I get along just fine with them. I find them nice. I do find them, on average, above average intelligence, and you know, sense of humor, that type of stuff. But like I've been saying a lot, there's a sense, just like this streak of paranoia. And you think of Woody Allen, right? And Woody Allen reflects that. You know his persona. He's like,
and it is funny.
Yeah, and it's funny, but you know, he's always a little bit nervous, you know, and there is, you know, something like that. There's this paranoia, and it leads them to be ruthless because they think they have to be in control. And you know, the thing is, just earlier talking about how little people understand about Jewish power. Well, of course, they're not going to understand Jewish power very well because discussion of Jewish power is suppressed, because discussion of Jewish power is destruction of Jewish power. And so we're not allowed to discuss it. So there's not a lot of discussion. People, to the extent they understand things, to a large extent, have to figure it out for themselves. Like, I mean, to a large extent. Obviously, you know, I read your book. You had read George Lincoln Rockwell. George Lincoln Rockwell read he read Henry Ford. You know, so it's not 100% reinventing the wheel, but Ford was repressed. Ford's book was repressed, and then Lincoln Rockwell was repressed. You were repressed. I'm being repressed. So people do, to a large extent, have to figure out things for themselves. It makes it slow, and so the understanding is really, really low. And often, what happens is when people finally do wake up one way or another, they're kind of pissed off, right? And you know, I'll hear some of the people, sometimes people on RBN who are relatively new at this, and they can be really I don't know, how would you say, kind of over the top. And especially a lot of these, oftentimes, these are people who don't have, like, very few people have as much direct contact with Jews as I do. And if you don't have direct contact and you understand that Jews are responsible for this war in Ukraine, which killed hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians, tens of thousands of Russians, it hasn't killed very many Jews, you know, and they were just doing it for their own power thing. And you look at what's going on in Israel, it's really easy to think the worst of Jews, not just in terms of their group behavior, but then translate that into like individual
behavior. It's a group strategy, right? I mean, it's a strategy that they think is going to improve their group, and in that strategy, they're paranoid about anti-Semitism. They're promoting goyim. One of the best things you can ever read is that Stephen Steinlein quotation, right, from that article he wrote about migration, immigration, all that stuff, where he talked about I went to Jewish school every summer, like typical Jews of my generation, taught that Israel, we thought we were superior to Gentiles and all the rest. But here's the deal. I have a question for you. And one thing I love about our conversations is you always make me think about different points. And I was thinking about the fact that, yes, you've met a lot of Jews and you have a lot of conversations and you've enjoyed the conversations and you find them interesting. And some of them seem to be nice. Some of them maybe aren't so great. Many of them are great. Many of them you like, right? But here's the deal. If you talk to the average Palestinian in the West Bank who's had to deal with the Jewish settlers all the time, who know that they're the enemy and who trying to kill them and torture them, put them in their prison, but they've had other people killed by them. And also they've encountered the Jews and the hatred of the Jews, just like these priests in Jerusalem that I one time walked with on the streets when I visited there. And it was like, you know, in 10 minutes time, Jews were like spitting at us, you know, the priest, you know, every day, right? So these Jews, obviously, you could not afford to tell them all the things you think. I guess with some intellectual Jews, you could kind of covertly, in a way, and kind of subtly say.
You know, I don't think I've ever talked to a Jew that openly. They don't listen to my show.
But what I'm suggesting, of course not. But what I'm suggesting is that, let's say you were somebody like me, even though I'm real intellectual about it, and I try to put everything in a third party, even though I get worked up about the Palestinians or some passionate what they're doing to our people and our women and, you know, our fan, all this stuff. And I do get passionate about that. But when I'm dealing with an individual, I have the ability just to deal with them as an individual, you know, and talk to them, argue with them even about some certain thing, as long as he's somewhat polite, that's fine, right? After we can argue and disagree and we can go have a beer together, right? But it's like your impression of Jews might be different if they understand you like you're one of the enemy. If you were a Palestinian, they wouldn't even be probably give you the business.
Well, my impression wouldn't actually be different because built into my impression.
No, I'm saying if they knew what your opinions were.
It's the assumption that if I was completely open with my opinions to them, that they would be at a minimum shocked. And
they would not like you.
And often feel betrayed, right?
They would feel betrayed.
I don't even look at it that way. I mean, honestly, I think what we're doing, I'm trying to help the Goyim. But honestly, I think it's best for the Jews. The Jews need somebody to give them some discipline, if not tough love, right? They need this because if they destroy the world, they're bringing themselves down too.
I'm just saying that if they knew where you were coming from, what your opinions were, if you had a badge on you that I support, you know, white survival in America, or I support, you know, no war for Israel or something.
Even when I have a badge on me. I told you that one story about the guy who looks at my name tag and says, "That's a funny name for a Jew." He thought I was Jewish. He was telling me all these Jewish tricks that he had done in order to get on.
What I'm saying to you is that, you know, like I told you about
running for. That's a funny name for a Jew.
I know, that's hilarious. But also, yeah, when Jews think they're Jews, it's amazing. And that's one thing I've really enjoyed about reading these Jewish think tanks and these Jewish articles, which they're writing for each other, right? And they forget that their audience is also going to be read by people like us instead of dumb guys, right, who are neoconservative converts, right? And what I'm saying to you is that maybe you wouldn't think that they were so nice if, in fact, they knew what you thought and they knew what you supported.
They wouldn't be nice. Most of them wouldn't. Most of them wouldn't be nice to me.
And a lot of them would try to hurt you in one way or the other. Some of them might even try to physically attack you.
Well, I don't know about physically attack me, but they might try to undermine me.
I think a lot of Jews would love to physically attack me. I've run into a lot of times in my life because of who I am.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There was a big young Jew on a basketball court once. He was big enough that he might have physically attacked me. Okay. But
yeah. But I'm just saying that if you're fighting the Jews openly and you're their enemy, their ethnic enemy and their religious enemy and their cultural enemy and their racial enemy, right? You would have felt, you would have experienced a lot of,
right. No.
A lot of persecution.
I would have, my experience with them would be very, very different. And that is built into my assumption. I assume that that's the case. But
I also, not experiencing it gives you a kind of a different psychological impression of them, right? Because they're treating you nice, but they don't, you know, they want to think that you're sympathetic to them in terms of your beliefs. But Jews are very, very ethnocentric, and they're very conscious about any anti-Semitism.
No, that's true. That's true. I know that. But, you know, the thing is, only, 0.something% of the Goyim know, right? And so...
So they're not thinking you know.
For the most part, they
But they're always suspicious, and they're always looking for a word or two. You know?
Well, the other thing is, but here's something else. Just like I was saying, how these top-level people don't understand Jewish power. I don't think Jews understand Jewish power. I really don't. I don't think they understand it. Some of them might know that they wield a whole lot of power, but even if they know that they wield a whole lot of power, I don't think they understand how it works. I don't know. What can I say to back that up? But like the everyday Jews probably don't fully understand how much power they have. And to the extent that they do, they think, well, it's for their own good. It's takum alone. There's a lot of self-deception that goes on. There's a great deal of self-deception. And I don't think they understand Jewish power. I don't think very many people do. I don't think very many Jews do. And here, one last thing, and this is something that I brought up on my show today at the end of the show with Jeremy. The Holocaust, right? The Jews believe it. I think they believe it. Where are they hearing conflicting information? They believe it, and it reinforces this whole paranoia trip that is really at the root, as far as I'm concerned, it's at the root of Jewish group behavior. It's this paranoia. And their religion is based on being persecuted, right? They're always being persecuted. Their festivals are based on them overcoming their enemies and defeating their enemies. And now the new religion is the Holocaust. And, you know, it's used, when I say it's used, it has the effect of inflicting guilt on the Goyim and making them shut up and making them obedient. But it also has the effect of turning up increasing the Jews' own paranoia and making them that much more ruthless.
Very good. That's right.
I think most of the Jews, virtually all the Jews, believe it.
Yeah, I know. And that embeds a lot of hatred in them. I mean, really, the truth is the Holocaust is hate propaganda for Jews, right? It's to hate, get them to hate us.
The Holocaust is hate speech.
We kill their children, you know. But let me point out a little. I can give you a little story. Of course, I've had the great luck of knowing a lot of infamous people and famous people and Jewish people around the world that I made. I've known a lot of Jewish people that Jews call self-hating Jews, right? And as you know, you've read some of Gilad Altman too. I think you probably read The Wandering Who, right? I don't know if you did or not. Pretty good book. I read some of his essays about, he even says we got freedom of speech in the Holocaust, and there's some good questions there. And I got to spend some time with him. I was on a trip with England with Maria and I, and we went to the Zest convention, actually, and I had a scholarship to it and got a scholarship for her. But anyway, so we're there, and I met with him for about 5 or 6 days, drinking a beer, talking, having dinner. He introduced me to some of his fellow anti-Zionist friends and other people, mostly Gentiles that he knew. And we talked about a lot of things. And we were talking about the Jewish nature. And I'm saying, of course, the Jewish religion overwhelmingly in the world is Orthodox. And I'm saying, I've seen all these videos.
I've seen the videos of the yeshivas where the Jews are rocking their heads and they're chanting, you know, and all this stuff. And I said, in some ways, I asked him a question because he's raised a Jew, right? It was in the IDF and all that stuff. And I said, Jews are definitely cerebral. But at the same time, they're, like Freud was talking about, you know, the reptilian brain, the limbic brain. And he said, I've always noticed with the Jews, and this is one thing that makes them very good actors and it makes them very good orators and things like that, that I think they have a lot of emotionalism in it, much more than the typical Aryan, you know, much more than typical North European, the more quiet North European. They're louder. They're a little more pushy. And they get very, very emotional.
They asked me how I knew my true love was true.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store. Or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Together.
I think they have a lot of emotionalism in it, much more than the typical Aryan, you know, much more than typical North European, the more quiet North European. They're louder. They're a little more pushy. And they get very, very emotional, and they can get very angry. If you look at these crowds of Jews in Jerusalem, not just in this last thing, but how these radical Jews are, they're insane. I mean, they would sit there and torture you if they could to death, if they could get away with it. But when they get into a group, they do that. And I asked him, I said, What's your experience with that? I'm sure you've been to synagogue many times. I'm sure you've had a lot of contact with these Jews and seen their emotion. I said, what's your feeling about that? And he said, you know something? You gave me a real insight then, because, you know, I think you're completely right. He said they can be very cerebral. They can be very intellectual. But they get very, very emotional. And when they get emotional, they get practically crazy. Many of them, not all of them, of course. And maybe there's a difference there in whether the Jews have Northern European blood or Southern European blood, I don't know, in their body as well as what they got. And by the way, I've got an interview that I've got where people, he was talking, they were talking about me in an interview that he was on. And he told the interviewer, right? And he said, I read David Duke's books, and I talked with him deeply, asked him a million questions. And I said, I honestly believe that I learned more about Jews from David Duke than anybody else I met in my life. And I think that David Duke understands Jews better than Jews even understand it, Jews. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? I mean, he literally told me that. And yeah. he said that, and I consider that a real compliment. But he said that because that's what he said. I mean, he actually said that on the air to some people. But he said it's amazing. David Duke is not what people think he is. But so I don't know. I think that, you know, if we were in the conflict, in the existential conflict with them, in more of an apparent way. Like we are being pushed, you are being pushed out of your homes, and your kids are being, you know, arrested by the Jews and tortured in their prisons. And they are more overtly against, you know, doing things to you. And I think, like I said so many times now, you don't really know how these people really are until they feel threatened, or they feel that you're an enemy, or they... You know, they feel there's a threat to them in the society, that you constitute a real threat to them. Then you really feel their power, and then you really feel their meanness and their extremist kind of attitude. And I think that's what the Palestinians have been experiencing.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that at all. The Palestinians' experience with them is like that. But the typical American's experience is nothing like that.
Well, that's exactly right. But that's one of the things. So if you say you kind of like them, I understand why you like them. But they also know they're living in a goy world, right? In a goy country. And
okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that. So, like I say, tomorrow, Friday, I may well do a Boomer Vision and include the remainder of that conversation. I'm going to listen to it and make sure it's worth including. We'll see. But I think this was worth it. So, right. So I hope you enjoyed, and Merry Christmas. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You saw me standing alone.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC.
417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.